One of my favorite seminary professors was fond of saying that anyone who can hold together two thoughts about God at the same time can be a theologian. I'm encouraged by that thought because I often struggle to hold together two thoughts about God at the same time, but I confess that that may be a somewhat low bar. Well, it seems like these days everybody who wants to can be a philosopher. Even celebrities, who are not generally known for their deep or critical thinking abilities. For example, the talented but grammatically challenged actor Christopher Walken said, "You know, there's nothing you can do about your public image. It is what it is." And the multiply married media mogul Ted Turner lamented, "I regret that I wasn't more successful with my marriages, but, say it with me, it is what it is." And soulful singer Sufjan Stevens reflected, "You know, I don't think my music's important. I don't think it is changing the world. I don't think it's art. I think it's just music. Again, it is what it is." It is what it is. A repeat winner of Gene Collier's Trite Trophy for Cliché of the Year has become a kind of catch-all philosophical sentiment. It's a phraseological shrug of the shoulders, an articulated meh. It's meant to suggest both acceptance and resignation. The Rangers are not going to make it to the playoffs this year. It is what it is. There's nothing that can be done. It cannot be changed. It's a fact. It is accomplished. It is there. It isn't going to change. C'est la vie. So be it. That's that. It is what it is. Or that's how most people use it anyway. But Leanne Gabora, a psychology professor in British Columbia, sees it is what it is in a different light. She writes in Psychology Today, "I was taking the phrase to mean, it's not this, and it's not that. It's something more subtle that I don't have a name for, and I'm okay with that." That is, to Professor Gabora, it is what it is recognizes possibilities. It's full of potential. To come at it is what it is from this point of view, the speaker lets the person or the situation or the feeling just exist in all of its rich uniqueness without having to categorize or to analyze it. Person or feeling or situation simply, well, is what it is, full of potential meaning and fraught with possibility. But as I envision Moses out there in the desert, tending his sheep somewhere well north of the age of 50, I think Moses probably had to say to himself, well, you know, it is what it is, with the first meaning in mind. We learned last week that Moses had escaped the mass murder of Israelite infants when his mother birthed him and placed him in a basket and then set that basket afloat on the River Nile, where the basket and the baby therein were discovered by the very daughter of the king who had issued that genocidal order. Moses thus grew up a Hebrew in the house of the Egyptian Pharaoh. Only when Moses learned who he really was, when Moses learned how his own people were being abused and oppressed by the very family and system in which he had been raised, Moses went out and killed a man. Pharaoh would have regarded that as an act of treason. His own people regarded it as an unwelcome act of rebellion. So Moses was forced to flee not only the royal household, but indeed Egypt itself. Moses fled to the desert of Midian where he married into a local tribe and ended up tending the sheep of his father-in-law. He was once again an outsider living among foreigners. And it happens that one day while he was tending his father-in-law's sheep, Moses saw a burning bush, a thorn bush ablaze in fire, but yet not consumed in its flames. And when Moses went to investigate this peculiar sight, the voice of God spoke to him, calling him by name. God wanted Moses to go back to Egypt, to go back to Pharaoh, back to the family and a system that were oppressing Moses and God's people. God wanted Moses to go back to Egypt and Pharaoh and that oppressive system and demand the release of his people. Which must have sounded very simple and straightforward to God, as God's plans typically do. Go to the land that I will show you, God says to Abraham. Go to Pharaoh and say, let my people go, God says to Moses. But who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, Moses wants to know, and how can I possibly get all those Israelites out of Egypt? No problem, says God, with a degree of self-confidence that is surprising even for God. No problem, because I will be with you. That's terrific, Moses said, at least to himself, if not aloud. I mean, it's one thing to have to go to the oppressor. It's quite another to have to go to one's own people. That has problems in and of itself. So, says Moses, let me get this straight. I'm going to go to the Israelites and say, your father's God sent me to you. Now, let me put it to you this way, God. Those people will immediately ask me what this God's name is, and what am I going to tell them? I am who I am, God answered. Which is just about as helpful and self-evident as it is what it is. I mean, think about it. What exactly does I am who I am mean? Like Moses, we would like for God to be a little more precise. If God, I am supposed to do your will and follow your command and entrust myself to you in this enormous life-changing project, for which, may I remind you, I am woefully underqualified, then I need to know who you are. I don't just need to know what you are like. I don't need to know just what you did for me yesterday. I don't particularly care that you are my parents' God and my grandparents' God. God, I need to know your nature. I need to know your identity. I need to know your name. God, I need to know you. Oh, I understand completely, God says to Moses, which is why I have already told you my name. I am who I am, which strikes us as a very odd name for God. Whatever happened to Tom or Esmeralda? Why does God insist on being known as the Lord or God? In religion-neutral settings, we might be content with providence or the Almighty or even a higher power. We like attaching adjectives to God's name. We say God is loving and gracious and merciful, and that is true, for God is. But we like attaching those names because they help us get a handle on God, which is exactly what God wants to resist. God doesn't want us getting a handle on God. God doesn't want us to get a hold of God. That's God's job, grabbing us, getting a handle on us, grabbing hold of us, sending us to that unseen land, wrestling with us all night, wondering whether we will be willing to give everything to be faithful to God, commissioning us to set God's people free from systems that oppress and enslave. To be that kind of God, then, demands absolute freedom, which is the very name and nature of God. But God's name, like God's nature, is notoriously tricky to pin down with any degree of exactness. In fact, there is no one precise way to translate the Hebrew name for God. Just look at the footnote in your study Bible and you will see that there are any number of ways you could translate God's name. Some possibilities are, I am what I am. I will be what I will be. I create what I create. I cause to be what I cause to be. Those aren't four different names like the Prince of Wales has, Charles, Philip, Arthur, George. Nope, those are all ways to name the one divine name. A name that has at its heart the freedom of the verb to be. Which means, friends, that God is. That God is absolute existence. That God is utterly transcendent, that God is not confined by the boundaries of time and space, and in that sense, God is completely free. Free to be who God is, even to the point of having God's own future. In fact, one way to translate the divine name is, I shall become who I am becoming. Which is a radically different way for many of us to think about the nature of God. Very different from the way many of us are accustomed to thinking. We like to think that God's nature is fixed, that it's set, that it's permanent, that it's written in stone, like the commandments that Moses himself will soon bring down from the mountain. And in that sense, we like to think that God's nature is unchanging. But what do you do with a God whose nature is freedom to be? What do you do with a God who is free to be who God is? With a God who is free to be who God will be? With a God who is free to become what God is becoming? What do you do with a God whose name is, it is what it is? David Lowes thinks that what God is actually saying is that you can't really know who God is until you sign on for God's mission in the world. For Moses, that means going back to Egypt, back to Pharaoh, back to a family and a system that enslave and oppress, back to demand that people's freedom. It means going back to Pharaoh, who wanted him dead, and to a people who didn't care one way or another whether he was, and to work on behalf of that people and their freedom. For Moses, signing on for God's mission in the world meant speaking truth to power while overcoming both a speech impediment and a deep fear of public speaking. For Moses, signing on for God's mission in the world means facing down a world superpower armed with a stick and the threat of some really awful plagues. For Moses, signing on for God's mission in the world meant putting himself in the hands of a God who values freedom, because freedom is that God's very nature. For you and me as Christians, questions for you and me as believers in God who comes to us in Jesus Christ. Signing on for God's mission in the world means denying ourselves and taking up a cross and following Jesus, which means being willing to risk suffering. It means being willing to embrace that which has the potential to kill us. It means not only praying for our enemies, but feeding them if they're hungry, or giving them a cup of cold water if they're thirsty. It means doing those things for Jesus' sake. For us as Christians, signing on for God's mission in the world means living and loving and serving as Jesus did, and that for the sake of the gospel. It isn't fun, it isn't easy, indeed it is what it is. But when you and I are willing to lose our life, a life that we know and love, a life of predictability and security and control, then we have the possibility of finding the one true life that is what it is, resurrection life, new life, a life full of potential and fraught with the possibility of finding the true freedom of love.